Welcome to the 236th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with novelist Karan Bajaj, author of The Yoga of Max's Discontent. Stay tuned for the interview. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is best-selling writer Karan Bajaj, author of the new novel, Yoga of Max's Discontent. Karan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jeff. A real pleasure to be here.
Sure. Well, can you read two or three pages from your new novel, Yoga of Max's Discontent?
Yes, absolutely. I can. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to read a page from the early part of the novel when the character, when the protagonist Max first comes to India, because it gives a sense of the Indian Himalayas, which is a little bit of a unique part of the world. And it also a little bit lampoons the Western spiritual seeker, as Indians would do, which is typically not talked about in Western literature much, because there's a tendency to exoticize the Indian experience. So here we go.
Great.
The road became narrower from the Uttarkashi bus stand. They crossed a low-lying cement bridge just inches above the river. The riverbank was lined with debris, bricks, concrete, truck tires, engine parts, and tree branches. A cloud burst here 5 months ago, said the man. 7 days of non-stop rain. People, houses, trucks, all taken by the river. Some people haven't even been found yet. The roaring, angry river below them was so close, Max could touch it. Any moment now, the river could rise and drown them, like it had drowned hundreds of others. Or the weak bridge could break. How fragile this body, this life was. The jeep lurched. Max held on tight, feeling a renewed sense of purpose for his journey. They crossed the bridge. A 20-foot-tall iron statue of an Indian god with long, matted hair, sculpted muscles, and a trident in his hand stood incongruously on the riverside. Pilot Pava's ashram, said the man, pointing to a cluster of white houses scattered next to the statue. If you want, you can stay here until the winter ends. Is he a guru? Everyone is a guru in India, said the man witheringly. Pilot Baba was just a regular pilot in the Indian Air Force. His helicopter crashed here, and he had some sort of spiritual realization. Perhaps that there is more money to be made in this racket than in flying planes. So he became a guru. Max laughed. How did he find his disciples? No shortage of foreigners touring exotic India, he said. Pilot Baba teaches that man loses his ego during orgasm, so there is plenty of sex here. Westerners love it. Spiritual McDonald's. As if on cue, a dreadlocked white guy in just a t-shirt and shorts emerged from one of the houses. He shut his eyes and spread his arms out melodramatically in the frigid air. Max's face went hot with embarrassment. Was there really no difference between him and these 18-year-old hippies? He strengthened his resolve to keep pushing forward until he found a real guru. Do you want to get off here? Said the man, slowing down his jeep. I'll pass, said Max. There is a man further up in Bhojbasa I want to visit. The roads are closed beyond Bhatwari. I'll take my chances, said Max. I can stop here if you want.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No worries.
Well, if someone listening hasn't heard about Yoga and Max's Discontent yet, how would you describe your novel?
I would describe the novel as both a very page-turning adventure through hidden India and a journey of personal transformation. And I think both aspects are extraordinarily important to me because I set out to write a spiritual / self-transformation novel that had no message at all and no presence of the author at all and could just be read like a thriller. So the journey through hidden India's secret ashrams and hidden mountain, the hidden Himalayas and surreal night markets, those are very integral parts of the character's transformation.
Sure. Well, you've had other best-selling novels published, The Seeker, Keep Off the Grass, and Johnny Gone Down. And I know after your second novel, you were stuck as a writer until you discovered the link between meditation and silence and creativity. Can you talk about what you discovered?
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. It's a good question. I think what was happening, though, was actually even bigger than being creatively stuck. In the Indian tradition, we have this idea that man's journey is a little bit like an eagle flapping its wings high, then bringing it down. So kind of like your purpose of life is to first experience and grow through the experiences in the world. So like keep pushing your wings higher and higher. And then you have to kind of bring the wings down gracefully and go within. I think what was happening with me in my life was that I had experienced a lot in the world, and my writing, at least the first couple of novels, were very much about people figuring their place out in the world. And what was starting to happen with me was a more seismic change in which I was going, I guess I was feeling that the world of experiences was incomplete and I was trying to go within a little bit. And I think there was this tension between who I was becoming and what I was writing about. I was still writing about experiences in the world, while I think what was happening to me was becoming more and more internal. And I think the act of like meditating and silence just helped me once again to truly kind of center my life again. And like, I guess gave the spark to this novel.
Yeah. Sure. And what was that process like for you? I mean, didn't you go to on your own kind of quest in terms of meditation and retreat?
Yeah, I've been following over the last decade or so what I call like a 414 model, in which I work for 4 years and take a year off, and then work for 4 years and take a year off. And it's almost like that. It's not like a year off to write or something like that. It's almost 4 years of very goal-driven activity and then 1 year of submerging myself into conscious goallessness, like basically diving into nothing almost. And I've done this over three cycles now. So over the last decade, I've done it three times. And my first two sabbaticals were very in the world. Like I was traveling and living in like South America and Bhutan and Mongolia. So they were very in the world. This sabbatical was kind of like timed very well with where my life was going. And this sabbatical was truly like an internal quest, if you will. So out of the 1 year, my wife and I spent 5-6 months in an ashram up in the Himalayas. And we were in like pretty intense silent meditation for 30 to 40 days out of that period. And then the rest of the time we were learning to become yoga teachers, and in a very kind of a very tight, disciplined way, deepening our practice of yoga and meditation in a very, very remote place up in the mountains where we had like almost no connection with the world for a good 5-6 months. And then the other 5-6 months was really like part of the journey was traveling from Europe to India by road without plans at all. So really arriving in Scotland, which was the cheapest flight from New York, and having no clue at all of what the next day would be, and just kind of drifting along, arriving to India. And then on the return back, I stopped in Portugal and just wrote in a burst. So it's almost like for the first 9 months of the sabbatical, I didn't write a single word. And then I wrote the whole novel in a 3-month burst in Portugal.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so how would you describe, if you can, a 30 to 40 day silent retreat for someone who's listening?
So it's a very good question, in the sense that it's very tough, but part of the tradition that I have done this in is Vipassana, which is like a silent meditation retreat in which you pay for nothing at all, right? So you don't pay for food, lodging, the instruction. It's almost like for 30 days, somebody's taking care of all your needs and teaching you meditation. The reason I'm mentioning that is because what happens with that kind of a system is that you truly become a monk when you enter the retreat, and you are coming with a begging bowl. You have paid for nothing. You have no right to demand anything. So I think that softens you a lot right at the starting point, right? Because if you came and paid for some very luxury spa retreat and you paid like $3,000, you would have a lot of expectations on what you want, what is good, are you enjoying it, are you not enjoying it. When you are just being cared for and given two meals a day by people and given a good, decent enough place to stay, you're just like, there's no complaining. I have to fully surrender to this experience. So I think almost that's the starting point, is that the infrastructure, the way it's set up, allows you to be a little bit more of a monk than a demanding kind of New Yorker almost. So I think that's kind of part one. But then once you do it, it's very tough. Like irrespective of that mindset, you are very, you just struggle a lot because it's very rigorous. It's not like you can just sit in your room and think. They wake you up at 4 o'clock with a gong, and you have to like get out of the room in pretty cold environment and like go to a meditation hall, and you have to stay still with your back erect for 2 hours, and you have to keep doing that for almost, in that we sleep for 6 hours, and out of the remaining 18 hours we are already meditating on the clock for 14 hours. So it's very intense for both the physical part, like just sitting, and then the obviously the emotional turmoil that is like, you know, you're just confronting your thoughts and I guess what a battlefield your mind is.
Sure.
Yeah.
I did a 3-day retreat one time, a silent retreat. I can't imagine 30 days.
Yeah, 30 days is, yeah. By the time you come out, you're very kind of like shaken up in some form or the
Yeah,
other.
I think rigorous would be the word.
Yeah,
That's a good
yeah.
word. So if someone listening is a writer and they're struggling with either their own life issues or their own writing and creative issues, how would you recommend that they kind of explore using meditation to help them with their own kind of creative struggles or life struggles that they're dealing with?
Couple of thoughts. The first thought is that the true benefit of meditation beyond these 30-day retreats or one day, like those deep dives of silence, are what I've seen in my own life is that my action-reaction cycle has delayed a little. So what that means is that if there is any irritation with the world, frustration with my writing, I guess there is a part of me that doesn't immediately react by being frustrated or irritated or angry or upset or even happy. A part of me is just spontaneously noting that emotion is arising in me, in which I'm getting angry. And just the act of noting dissipates the force of that reaction. Why that is so incredibly important is because it gives you a tremendous amount of like psychic energy back. Because if you think of our life, it's a constant action-reaction cycle. Like we get, like we're always constantly, like even this act of like feeling that you are frustrated and that you are stuck and you are blocked, that's an action-reaction constant loop in which it's very hard to find that space of silence in which you are just observing that emotion arise. And I think that kind of, so that I think is the biggest part of meditation, that it allows you, gives you a lot more psychic energy back because you are delaying your reaction to every stimuli.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Beyond developing a meditation practice, what advice would you have for aspiring writers who might be listening and are interested in writing their own novels or short stories based on your experience of writing 4 novels now? What kind of advice would you, general advice about writing would you give them?
My general advice is that my writing is always constructed on 2 pillars, entertainment and meaning. So if I can crack those 2 pillars well, I know that I'll write a great novel, right? So, or at least in my world, I'll write the best novel I can. So entertainment, if I deconstruct this thought, for me, both of the ideas of entertainment and meaning are linked to living a very, very big, interesting life. So if you're living a life in which you are constantly almost following the construct of a story and you're a hero on a quest who's moving from the ordinary world to the extraordinary world almost constantly. Anytime you go to the extraordinary world and that also becomes ordinary, then you move to the next extraordinary world. And that means travel, uncomfortable situations, kind of constantly being a person on a quest. I think that leads to both greater meaning and greater entertainment in your novels. So I think that's my simple construct, because what I've seen is that when people stop living that extraordinary life and stop going from the known world to the unknown world in the hero's quest kind of a model, even if they write a great first novel, their second, third, and fourth novel starts ending up looking very stale, because it's the same question of meaning that they are attacking in different kind of like story envelopes. But if you're a person who's kind of constantly living this life of quest and bigness, your meaning and the question that you keep asking keeps going deeper and deeper. So with every novel, you are attacking a different almost and a deeper question. And then obviously the entertainment comes through living a big life. So I think that's my simple advice, is to live a big, interesting life.
Great. Yeah. Are there books and authors that inspire your own writing?
Yeah, and I'll give you a surprising answer of perhaps the most inspiring novel for me has been Forrest Gump, the book, not mm-hmm. the movie. And it's typically not mentioned as any great literature, but for me, that I guess, I don't know, I was like a kid living in India in a very small town, and I remember running into that novel because my aunt had dropped it in my house when she was visiting from the United States, and I just read the book, and it just gave a lot of wings to my imagination. It almost changed my life in a very significant way. I remember that particular moment that I'd read the book and started dreaming of a big life. And I don't know, I think that for me is the power of writing, in which it's a very entertaining novel and yet has a very profound meaning to it about not believing in your limitations at all. Right? I almost feel like books like that, which are page turners and can be very simple to read and yet have a very profound sense of meaning in it are very important in my life, are my biggest inspiration. So Forrest Gump is like obviously a classic one that comes to my mind, but in the recent time, I've really enjoyed The White Tiger because, again, it kind of like makes a statement about India, but in a very page-turning way. And it's very hard to find that balance now.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And how did you originally get interested in writing? Was it through reading that book, or what was kind of your writing journey like when you started writing fiction?
And this one is a funny one because for the first 28 years of my life, I don't think I wrote a single non-technical word. Because I'm an engineer, an MBA, worked with Procter & Gamble in a corporate setting. So I've always been in a very corporate setting, if you will. And then I took a year off to travel, which was my first sabbatical. That's why this 414 rule is kind of like become very important to me. And I didn't intend to write at all. I just took a year off and lived in Bhutan and Mongolia, places like that, that I really wanted to live in. And 3-4 months into the journey, I just started to write because I just had this very innate need to express what I was going through in my writing. And then the novel ended up, and at age 29, I was a published novelist, which became like a number one bestseller in India because it was very fresh for India at that time. Nobody was writing about stuff like what contemporary youth were going through. So at a broader point, I feel like this dive into nothing for me is so important because I didn't even know that I could be a writer. And I started writing. So now when I go for my 1 year sabbaticals, I don't go with this idea that I'm going to write a novel. I almost go with this idea that I'm going to do nothing. And then in the last sabbatical, I really did yoga and meditation, honestly, and just wrote for 3 months. And that ended up becoming this novel that Random House releases soon. But so I would say, yeah, like I think my writing process has just been like, or my discovery of writing was through a complete period of silence, of like absence of any goals at all. Yeah.
Gotcha. So where can people find you online to learn more about your approach to meditation and creativity and writing?
On karanbajaj.com, which is my website. It has a ton of content around how to meditate, how to begin your meditation practice, and then also how to write your novels. And I think the good thing is that since I keep my corporate job, I try to share things very selflessly. I think there's no agenda for me. I'm not trying to sell any, mm-hmm. material through it. So I think it's pretty pure material in terms of my own experimentation and journey. So, yeah.
Great. And I'll have a link to that website in the show notes as well. Well, again, we've been speaking with Karan Bajaj, author of the new novel, Yoga, A Max's Discontent. The book is in bookstores now, so go buy a copy. And Karan, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you very much, Jeff. This was a pleasure.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.